Well, this is Dr. Jeff Barrows, your host of the Voice of Advocacy podcast. I'm joined today by our Director of State Public Policy, Nicole Hayes, as well as a member of the leadership team of the Family Policy Alliance, and we'll probably also be referring to that group as the FPA. Now, the Family Policy Alliance is one of our terrific advocacy partners on the ground, especially in the various states around the country. And over the past several years, we've seen the value they add to our efforts to protect the vulnerable since they share our values here at CMDA. So today we are doing a second podcast on the topic of state abortion amendments since they are so consequential to the pro-life movement. And our guest today is Joseph Combe. He is the Director of Public Policy at the Family Policy Alliance, where he leads FPA's policy strategy, provides policy and legislative expertise, and drafts and advocates for pro-family legislation at the state and federal levels to release biblical citizenship. Joseph is a U.S. Army veteran and a graduate of Regent University's School of Law. He is licensed to practice law in Washington, D.C. and the state of New York. Joseph's legal experiences include anti-trafficking in persons, legal efforts, and both in foreign and domestic jurisdictions, and as well as various states around the country. He worked as a Regent Law Center for Global Justice intern outside of Jakarta, Indonesia, where he operated alongside Indonesian and other Southeast Asian lawyers and law students to combat the spread of illegal trafficking in persons. His other interests include reading and sports. He played on the ice hockey team at the Virginia Military Institute for 4 years and now enjoys surfing and paddleboarding in his beautiful home city of Virginia Beach, Virginia. So welcome to the podcast, Joseph.
Thank you for that kind introduction, Jeff. It is an honor and a privilege to join you on this podcast to talk about such an important subject. So thank you for having me.
Well, we're glad you're here. And as we've said, we're talking about state abortion ballot amendments that voters will decide on in 10 different states in November. Now, those states, let me just list them alphabetically. They include Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New York, and South Dakota. Now, what common elements are you seeing, Joseph, that are pushed by abortion and reproductive freedom proponents in the ballot amendments that are really likely to trick many voters?
This is really an important question worth considering, particularly for your audience. I know you're going to have a lot of healthcare professionals and folks that work in healthcare that are listening. And a lot of these trends that I'm going to mention specifically have to do with them and their descriptions of their work. So the overarching claim, one of the overarching claims that I want to just lay out at the front, is that the pro-abortion movement is calling these ballot initiatives, we're just re-enshrining Roe versus Wade into your state's law. And I'm sorry to say that's not the truth. Even if that were true, it would be bad. But that is not true. These ballot initiatives mostly go way further than Roe versus Wade. That is the top line messaging that is ultimately very ingenuous and deceitful. So if we start with that premise, I'll go through some of the, just a couple of the trends that we're seeing. And I think you'll notice it's almost as if they're coordinating these efforts. Mm. So here's what first one that I think is important is most of these ballot initiatives in their states remove the requirement that you have an actual doctor, a physician, perform whatever abortions are allowed. Instead, they insert into the law a nebulous and vague term like healthcare professional, and then they don't define that term in the initiative. So we don't know exactly what that means. And this is what I would call as a policy drafter, strategic ambiguity. They're trying to create ambiguousness in the law so that when these things get, let's say that the amendment passes and then there is some kind of legal conflict after a woman gets an abortion and the courts have wide latitude to interpret what the term like healthcare professional means. Maybe some nurse did it. Maybe a PA did it. Those people, well, you know, great servants of our healthcare world, have a lot less experience and expertise than a physician. And that's a common sense safety measure that most states that allow any kind of abortion have in their law already. And these amendments would repeal that and insert that nebulous term. Another thing they do is that some of the measures have exceptions for later term abortions, such as what would be required to preserve the life and the health of the mother, some kind of term like that, But the way they define that term is in the healthcare professional's reasonable judgment or good faith determination or some kind of, again, nebulous term like that. So now we've layered upon the ambiguity of the first ambiguity of the layer of what exactly is a healthcare professional. That's open to interpretation, whereas a physician, it's really clear. Then on top of that, you have the increasing ambiguity of, well, it's just in their good faith judgment that the woman's health might be harmed through this. And by the way, they don't differentiate between physical health or mental health. So the idea being that, for example, a woman could come in asking for a late-term abortion, even under the new ballot measures, the state doesn't allow abortion in the third trimester. But if the healthcare professional in question thinks that the woman might develop mental health problems because of this, then they can justify the abortion. Obviously, the much better treatment in that case would be, let's get this woman some psychological help and try to preserve the life of her baby. But because of, you know, there are plenty of doctors out there who are very much in favor of abortion. These ambiguities are designed to benefit them and their patients that are seeking an abortion by any means necessary. And then finally, there's a catch-all phrase that I've noticed in more than a few of these measures. They're trying to amend the definition of viability. So usually viability is at a fixed point in the pregnancy, at least generally speaking. But instead, the terms they use to define this are a significant likelihood of the fetus sustained survival outside the uterus without the application of, and this is direct language, extraordinary medical measures. I find this to be really pertinent in a forward-looking sense because, as you all know, viability technology is getting better all the time. The standard for viability is constantly moving towards earlier in the pregnancy, especially as this technology continues to improve. And this is all a great thing. But again, we have another ambiguous term here. What exactly is defined by an extraordinary medical measure? If there's a new piece of technology that could enable babies to survive outside the womb earlier and earlier, it may be new. Is that enough to count it as an extraordinary medical measure? And again, these measures or these ballot initiatives do not define a term like that, so we can't know. And this is once again designed to give the treating pro-abortion healthcare professionals wide latitude in determining who can get an abortion when. And I might just add the last thing is that most of these measures it would establish what's called a right to an abortion under their state constitution. This is a totally new concept of a right for American history. In American tradition, think of our Bill of Rights. We have rights against something. So I have a right to the government not infringing on my practice of my faith, or I have a right to the government not infringing on my free speech right. Well, these initiatives would grant someone a right to an abortion. In our previous rights, there's no imposition on another person required. If the government or anyone does nothing, then they will not infringe on my right to practice my religion. But in this case, you're requiring action from another to give this right to a woman. That's not only a very new definition of what a right is, a right to someone else's action, but it's also a pre-Christian concept of what people have a right to do. For example, if you showed one of these ballot measures to, say, an ancient Greek or an ancient Roman, they would wonder why this is shocking to anybody, why you even need to put this at law, because it was standard practice. We're undoing 2,000 years of ethical history brought about by Christianity spread through these measures. And that's worth noting and realizing what's at stake here.
Joseph, excellent points. And just thank you again for being with us today. It's such a pleasure to work with you and all those others at Family Policy Alliance and our collective work that we do together in advocating in the states to protect the vulnerable. So you're right. Those ambiguities are dangerous and deceptive, and it's done on purpose. And we know that. And that's truly why we're having this conversation today, because we know that it's done to truly trick the voters. Okay. So on that note, the dangerous part of this is one of the dangerous parts of this is if any of the pro-abortion ballot amendments are passed, they will be enshrined into the state constitution. Now, these will be difficult to repeal. I mean, it will essentially require another constitutional amendment to pass to undo that constitutional amendment. So what is the Family Policy Alliance doing to fight these amendments?
We at Family Policy Alliance are a national organization, and we're really blessed to be able to host a network alliance of state-specific family policy councils, or FPCs. These are state-centric groups that work on the same portfolio of issues that FPA does, but specifically in their individual state and state house. We are up to about 40 of them right now, which is great. Our goal is to get to all 50. So as you can imagine, they are leaders, sometimes the leader, in the fight in their states to oppose these ballot initiatives. FPA is existing to support those states and those state FPCs in their fight, their unique fight against each of these measures, because each one is different, each state is different. And for the benefit of your members who are listening from across the country, I'd like to mention a handful of these state family policy councils that are running specific campaigns against the ballot measures in their state. So I'll start with Arizona. Our FPC there is called the Center for Arizona Policy. And their campaign is called the It Goes Too Far campaign, because it does. The ballot initiative there goes way too far. There's been a bit of an abortion fight in Arizona right now. And right now, abortion is legal up to 15 weeks in Arizona with a lot of common sense safeguards in it. The proposed abortion amendment there takes the doctor out of the patient-doctor relationship, again, by removing that requirement for a physician. And it makes the safety precautions unenforceable. So this is endangering vulnerable young women. Any woman who is forced to consider the prospect of an unplanned pregnancy is a vulnerable woman. So that's why this ballot measure in Arizona goes way too far. It endangers these women. And so they're encouraging people to vote no on it. The next one is Florida. The FPC there is called Florida Family Voice. They have a really exciting series of events coming up right now. They're calling it the Voice for Life Tour. They're all getting on a bus as a staff with other pro-life advocates, and they're traveling around the state throughout the month of October. And they're holding events in the big cities around the state and other communities to stand against that abortion amendment, which is also very deceptively written and goes well beyond what Floridians generally want about life and where they stand. In Maryland, Maryland's really exciting because this is our newest FPC. They just got going this last year and they're already doing some great things. They did an open letter to Maryland residents on the measure, which you can find right on their website. It's marylandfamily.org/life. And they have lots of resources on their ballot measure there available for people to use on their website. Their ballot measure is called Question One. So if you go to marylandfamily.org/resources, they have all those there. Also, our Montana Family Foundation is the Montana FPC. If you're following what's going on in Montana, you know the ballot measure there is ballot measure number 4, or I think the official name for it is Constitutional Initiative 128 or 128. Their campaign is No Parents, No Doctors, No Limits. Vote no, which is true for that ballot initiative in question, is it takes the parental notification requirement out, it takes out the requirement for doctors, and it removes really any significant limitations or common sense protections from the current abortion laws in Montana. So that's Montana Family Foundation again. I'm excited about the next one, which is Nebraska. Nebraska has a really unique and interesting campaign going on that I want to talk about. Their campaign is called the Protect Women and Children Vote For Initiative 434 and Vote Against Initiative 439. Nebraska is the first state combating one of these ballot initiatives with its own ballot initiative. And I'm really excited about this strategy because it means they're giving the people of Nebraska something to vote for. This is the brainchild of our FPC there called Nebraska Family Alliance. So this is a really unique approach. Again, I'll make clear just for the audience, it's ballot measure 434 is the clear common sense protections for the second and third trimester, and it protects the health and safety of women. That's the biggest danger from the opposite initiative there, which is initiative 439. That's the one we would want to vote against because it destroys the health and safety of women in the state. I want to talk specifically from their perspective, which I want to clear up a couple things about. There's been a big misinformation campaign around the one in Nebraska. The Protect Women and Children Initiative does not create a right to an abortion in the first trimester. Any claim to that is slanderous and false. The initiative provides a minimum level of constitutional protection for preborn babies during the second and third trimester, while leaving protections in the first trimester for cases of rape, incest, or medical emergency to the Nebraska legislature, just like it is right now. And I want to say that early voting for that measure begins October 7th, so right around the corner for Nebraskans. Finally, the last state I'll mention is South Dakota. Our FPC there is a Family Voice. The amendment there is called Amendment G, as in golf. They're another young FPC, so they're not leading the campaign there, but they are an integral part of the campaign being led by Life Defense Fund. Their primary message is that the vaguely worded language will allow abortion through all 9 months. The abortion lobby is once again claiming that that amendment is just like Roe versus Wade being enshrined into law. But when you read the language, it's really not. I want to give specific credit to Governor Noem there. She's done a great job opposing this amendment so far publicly in the legislature. She just put out a great video about why she opposes it, and she deserves our credit for that. I'll just inform anyone who's in South Dakota, Family Voice has a voter guide with all the information on Amendment G in it. It's dakotavoter.com. They're also going to have a whole new blog post about this initiative and about Governor Noem's response up on their website this week. Their website is sdfamilyvoice.org. So I mentioned those specifically because those are our state FPCs that are really in the fight right now, and we'll be supporting them. And it's so important for anyone who cares about these issues to connect with their state family policy council. If you're a healthcare professional, they particularly want to hear from you because your voice is so powerful in this. We can talk about more why that is later. But an example of where that made a difference this year is in the great state of Arkansas. Arkansas was facing a ballot initiative this year. Our FPC there called Arkansas Family Council had an incredibly robust ground game to get signatures against this initiative. And it turns out that the other side, they did such a good job messaging on this and had such a good ground game that the other side didn't even meet all the requirements for signatures to get on the ballot. So in Arkansas, it won't even be on the ballot this year. Yeah. That's where this is so important, David. Evidence of it. So if you think you don't make a difference, Arkansas proves that you do.
We were very happy on our team that they were able to defeat the ballot from getting on in Arkansas. So thank you for that, Joseph. Well, I know that many of our listeners are likely aware that my home state of Ohio this past year passed a pro-abortion amendment, much to my chagrin. And it was by a 57% to 43% margin. And as people have spent some time digging deeper into the data, one of the surprising things that we've learned after that vote was that some 30% of those people who attend church weekly voted in support of the abortion amendment. Now, my question for you, Joseph, is do you have any thoughts as to why this was the case? This was a shock to me. And what would you say to our members listening to this podcast regarding the importance of properly educating their church community on these amendments?
Boy, you're right, Jeff. That was such a tragic statistic to come out of that. And we've been taking time to analyze that. And I want to give a shout out again to the state FPC there called Center for Christian Virtue. They have some great analysis of this on their website that if people really want to go in depth, I'd recommend. But I can give some bottom line points here that I think will be helpful, particularly to how your listeners can make a difference in churches especially. So why are people who profess to be Christians voting for this amendment? I think the first and biggest thing, and it's important to keep this in mind so we don't blame people too heavily for things they can't control. There is some blame to go around here in the Christian community, but we want to keep this overarching point, which is that on messaging, on advertising, the pro-life movement was outspent dramatically in Ohio. By some metrics, it's just a staggering amount of money. In some cases, some of the measurements even say it was 100-1. And when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, that is a dramatic difference in ad space. And what they did is the other side, the pro-abortion movement, used that spending deficit to lie to people. And it was successful. When there's that much of a funding gap in advertising, this is what's going to happen. People are going to believe things that aren't true. So there's a measure of relief there for the people who you did vote for this and shouldn't have, because they were being told things like, well, this measure will make sure women can actually get treatments for ectopic pregnancy. There is no pro-life law in America that prevents women from being treated for an ectopic pregnancy. I love getting to say that, especially to your audience, because you're probably the audience most familiar with that undeniable fact. But when you have an advertising deficit like that, people are willing to believe crazy things like that. So that's the top line thing that should give everyone a measure of grace for everyone. And that measure of grace allows me to challenge people after this, which is that the reality is evangelical pastors really need to lead on this issue. They need to make sure they are properly informed and not believing this falsehood, even justifiably created by an ad deficit. I don't think that's an excuse, really, for ministry leaders that God has entrusted with flocks of his vulnerable children. As a pastor, you need to know these things, and then you need to talk about them fearlessly. You can do this without violating any of your nonprofit rules or telling people who to vote for or what party to support. You can do this without doing that. This is about speaking God's truth and the truth about what we're facing in culture. So pastors have to lead. They have to inform their congregations, and it's pretty clear from that statistic that there's a lot of work to do in that department. And this is where a program in Ohio and a lot of our FPCs can be really helpful, as many of our FPCs have a church ambassador network. And this is a network alliance of pastors within these individual states that can support each other and be supported by the state FPC on issues like this to make sure people are properly informed, to help people get out and vote and make a difference with their voice. One of our sister ministries is called Christians Engaged. We have a recent but excellent partnership with them at Family Policy Alliance. And Christians Engaged wants to generate action among Christians to pray, vote, and engage. And this is where it can really make a difference, is on a ballot initiative like this. If Christians did those three things, pray, vote, and engage, they will win every one of these ballot initiatives for life.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to say on this message in Ohio is this is where the voice of pro-life healthcare professionals can really make a difference. Pastors are usually not doctors. They're usually not nurses. They're usually not PAs. They're people who are called by God to lead their congregation. And good pastors know that they have people of expertise in their congregations that they can call on for times like this. So if you're a healthcare professional, make it clear to your pastors in your local church that you're here to offer your professional medical expertise to them to sort through these sorts of things and to help make sure that the messaging and the medical truth about it is being communicated to the congregation. The voice of healthcare professionals who are pro-life on these things, the impact they can have cannot be overstated.
Joseph, as an attorney, what might be some legal and non-legal steps that states can take to protect the preborn and the health, lives, and safety of women and minors in states with wide abortion and gender-affirming access?
Yeah, this is a great question. And at first, the situation you outlined seems really daunting. You're in a state that's really opposed to Christian values, and they're entrenched in their laws. Like, it's easy to throw up your hands and say, where do you even begin? And I really empathize with that. We have state FPCs that are in states like this, and they're leading the way on it. But I mean, they're very empathetic and understanding. Like, it's hard to contemplate what it would take for change. But I want to encourage the listeners, first of all, to see opportunity where these things are. It means that there's fertile ground. The harvest is great if you are not daunted. The Bible says that God didn't give us a spirit of fear. So I want people to be emboldened to know you can make a difference here. And I'll talk about just a few of them. First ones I want to mention, I'll start by just the overarching message that life is not a losing issue at any level, in any context. There's this strain of pessimism about the life issue, particularly on the conservative side of the aisle these days, which is they think life is losing because we haven't won any of these state ballot measures until this year. I mean, Arkansas was the first one to defeat one. They deserve great credit for that. But people think life is losing, and the record just doesn't show that. If you look into records of wins and losses, particularly from pro-life politicians, every pro-life politician with a strong life record who defended their record and did not let that issue become the main issue of the campaign in question won. So I want to make that clear at the outset. Life is not a losing issue. It's a winning issue. And no matter what the other side tries, it's very hard to argue against these things, particularly from our perspective, if you do it with grace and truth. So I'll start with some legal options because I'm a policy director and a lawyer. So I won't go into too much depth, but I think you'll get the point from my high-level descriptions of these. The first one is, I think, one thing that's feasible to fight for at the state and local level in states like this is mandatory education on embryology. A lot of Christians are rightly opposed to the public school system. I get it. And we want to equip parents for how to deal with, you know, putting your kids through public school, because for a lot of parents, that's your option. And we understand that. So if we're going to have Christians in public school, we're going to have kids in there, let's try to do what we can to affect that curriculum positively for truth. And embryology, I mean, if kids want to go to college, they want to go on to medical school, you have to understand this. And there's no way, I think, to really look closely at the truth of the beginnings of human life without at least considering the perspective that life has immediate and inherent value upon conception. So if there's ways you can affect your local school boards, your education curriculum, to require education in early stages of human life and embryology, I think that's a great place to start. And if you're interested in that, FPA does have a program called the School Board Academy, where we can help train you to engage with your school board or to even serve on it. So you can find that on our website. I have a couple other ideas too. One such thing that I think your members will really appreciate is trying to require that abortionists have admitting privileges at their local hospitals and emergency rooms. This helps push back against the vagary of a lot of state abortion laws that these ballot initiatives we've talked about are in line with, which is what defines a healthcare professional. Well, because abortions are complicated and dangerous procedures, it's a common sense requirement that abortionists have admitting privileges for when something, unfortunately, inevitably goes wrong in their practice. So I think that's one that's very hard to argue against because, again, the center of it is the vulnerable mother who's submitting herself to this doctor. Parental rights are also really important to shore up in any context, because as we've talked about with these ballot initiatives, the parental rights are part of what's on the ballot with them. Parental notification, parental consent for minors, and parental rights is a holistic thing. There are parental rights that don't have to do with abortion, and there are parental rights that do have to do with deal with abortion and sexual issues. And if you can shore them up in other cases, it makes them easier to shore them up in this one. So anywhere you see parental rights under threat or an opportunity to strengthen them, I encourage your members to and the listeners to get involved to do that. Also, medical conscience rights are so important and very difficult to argue against. Even people who would call themselves pro-choice are generally in favor of doctors having a right to say no to doing procedures that they don't, that they have a conscientious objection to. Abortion is one of those. So medical conscience rights are gravely under attack in today's America, and the voice of current physicians and healthcare professionals is essential to helping with that. And that's something you can argue for boldly in your state, even if your state is generally opposed to these things. I want to give some non-legal options too. I've talked a lot about our state Family Policy Council network. If you're not involved with your state FPC, or at least just on their email list, I would really encourage you to just follow what they're doing. If you care about the life issue, they are the state leaders on this issue. Mm-hmm. They are the movers and shakers that will actually make a difference. So if you can support your state FPC, chances are, even if you're in a state that's really that really has a pro-choice posture, you have an FPC. We have FPCs in places like California and Washington and New York and Massachusetts. So if we have them there, you can make a difference with them, particularly if you're a healthcare professional, because your voice is powerful. The credibility you bring makes a real difference. I can't overstate that. So get involved with your FPC. Another thing that your listeners can do is support their local pregnancy resource center. Pregnancy resource centers are invaluable resources for vulnerable young women that are trying to deal with their unplanned pregnancy and maybe don't want an abortion or just don't know where to turn, or they don't have many resources themselves. Pregnancy resource centers support them, and they don't do abortions. If you don't support them, I'm not talking about monetarily, though you can do that. I'm talking about that they are under attack. There's a lot of litigation over pregnancy resource centers, for example, in the state of New York right now, and their ability to practice without doing abortions. They need your help, and they're doing literally life-saving work. So I would ask people, just consider, find out where your local pregnancy resource center is and get involved with them and support them. If you don't know how to find them, I would suggest looking into the network of the National Institute of Family Life Advocates, or NIFLA. It's a great national organization that supports pregnancy resource centers around the country. And then finally, I've said this before, but I'll just repeat it. State the truth. If you're a medical professional, the credibility you carry is so valuable. Something I don't have. As a lawyer, I have less credibility on these issues than you, and I do this professionally. So I can't tell you how important that is, and just encourage people, speak up. You know, the Bible says that if you step out in faith, the Lord will take care of you and will speak through you, even if you're speaking to kings. So don't underestimate the power of your voice. Speak out, because lack of awareness is where this kind of evil thrives. And if you can generate awareness, it sheds a light on this and makes change.
Yeah, I liken it to using the expertise that God has given us as Christian healthcare professionals. So great advice, Joseph. Well, our last question is going to deal with a little slightly different aspect of the whole topic of abortion, and that's because just in this past several days, the news has been filled with reports of two young women who tragically died from chemical abortion in Georgia. And we are not surprised, we being Christian healthcare professionals, especially myself as an OBGYN, knowing how the FDA has moved back from their original safeguards that they put in place when they approved mifepristone in 2000. We're not surprised that these deaths have occurred, but what has absolutely shocked me is how mainstream media have turned this whole issue on its head and have promoted the blame back to Georgia and their, quote, abortion ban. So my question is, yesterday, and we're dating when we're recording this, on Tuesday, there was a Senate hearing held by the Senate Finance Committee promoting this false theory. So I'm sure you're aware of these cases. I just want to hear what your thoughts are, Joseph, as an attorney and someone involved in the pro-life movement.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. I mean, there's such tragic cases on their own. They are made more tragic by the way that the pro-abortion movement and politicians are weaponizing the lies about these tragedies to further endanger women with the abortion by mail agenda. Abortion by mail is clearly the future for the pro-abortion movement. This is what they want to move towards, is chemical abortion-inducing drugs through the mail. And these cases should actually be beacons of why we need to oppose that agenda. So the tragedy is just really sad that these women's lives and their deaths are being weaponized in this way. I want to start by giving credit to our Family Policy Council there in Georgia. They're called Frontline Policy. They're an amazing, fantastic group doing great work for life, and there are other issues there in Georgia. And they have an excellent statement on this pinned on their social media right now that I would encourage any listeners to go and look at. They're on all the major social media platforms. You really can't miss that post. You can also find it at their website, which is frontlinepolicy.com. So their statement is excellent, and I'm really just saying what they're saying even better than me, which is, first of all, that the claim that Georgia's pro-life laws delayed the care of either Amber or Candy, the two women in question here, mm-hmm. is both shameful and deceitful. It's just a lie. And it's made worse, I think. I tried to think of how to frame this in a way that would be particularly pertinent to your listeners, which are a lot of healthcare professionals, which is, I think if you're a healthcare professional who's not pro-abortion, I think you'd be frustrated by the way doctors are talking about this, because ever since Roe versus Wade, for generations, doctors have been adapting their practice to abortion law and for the benefit of women around the country. Like, this is something they just do. They have lawyers in the hospital, and they themselves are usually familiar with this. So they do these kind of procedures. Like, they know exactly what the law says. So why are they suddenly being allowed to claim that, oh, we can't decipher this law, or just outright lied about it, didn't allow them to treat these women? Those of us who are serious people know that that's not true. It doesn't take much recent historical thought to figure that out. So that's a tragic implication of this. The pro-life laws there, I mean, no pro-life laws in America, especially in Georgia, prevent proper medical care mm-hmm. when a pregnancy has failed, including a D&C on a deceased fetus. In fact, that's emergency care, because it becomes, it's really, really, as we know, dangerous to women if there's any part of that tragically deceased baby left inside her. Doctors have a duty to take care of that. So no pro-life law prevents them from doing that. Mm-hmm. And I just think so much of this is confusing people, because people have a natural instinct to want to trust their doctor. Doctors are people you want to trust. And I speak as someone with my two best friends are doctors. Like, I would trust them with my life. I think a lot of people would say that about their physicians. So when doctors who are friendly to the abortion agenda are out there not speaking truthfully about situations and laws like this, it confuses people. I have a great feeling for those people that are confused by this, because they rightly want to trust their physicians, and their physicians are not telling them the truth. Mm-hmm. And cases like this show the danger of that. I mean, Jeff, I was there at the court the day that the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine case against the FDA was argued at the Supreme Court. I spoke at an event there that day, which was really powerful, and the court's decision was disappointing. But I think the theory of the pro-life movement there is sound, which is that the more available and accessible these drugs are without the supervision of medical professionals and other common sense requirements, the more vulnerable women will be endangered by them. Any government that endangers their vulnerable women this way is a government that has betrayed them. So this is a really serious issue, and I'm sad for all the bad messaging around it. But again, I think this is also an opportunity to make sure we make clear that these cases are the future that the abortion movement wants. They want mail order abortion to be the future of abortion in America. And if you like that, then this is what you're going to get. And I would just encourage people, understand how tragic this is, but especially why the tragedy is layered, and make your voice heard. Again, use awareness. These kinds of things thrive on lack of awareness. When medical professionals and good policy analysts speak out about the truth of these laws, it helps prevent cases like this. So this is a microcosmic vision of the future of the pro-life and pro-abortion fight in America. So we can learn a lot from it.
And we certainly can't allow these lies to go unanswered. Another one that's out there that just drives me crazy is that mifepristone is just or is safer than Tylenol. That is an absolute absurdity. And anybody that's a healthcare professional that understands the mechanism and how these things work knows that's absolutely absurd. But, well, thank you, Joseph. We frame our advocacy work here at CMDA as protecting the vulnerable. And at this point in time in our country, there is no more vulnerable person than the preborn. And I've quoted this verse before on this podcast, but it really just so applies to what we're discussing today. And that's the verse out of Proverbs 31:8, which commands us to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. And the preborn cannot speak for themselves. And so it falls on us. It's our responsibility to speak up for them. So I want to just ask all of you who are listening to us today to please pray for the defeat of these pro-abortion amendments. Even if you don't live in one of those states, please be in prayer. And if you happen to live in a state where one of these amendments are on the ballot, please use the resources. We've been sending out emails, and we've got resources that are embedded in those emails, links to those. And if by chance you don't see an email from us and you live in one of the 10 states, just contact us at advocacy@cmda.org, and we will send you those resources. So, Joseph, we at CMDA are thankful for the work of the Family Policy Alliance in speaking up for those who cannot speak for themselves, including the preborn. So thank you for taking the time to join us today and for your work in protecting these preborn babies.
Well, just thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Jeff. I mean, you and your team at CMDA just do heroic work on this and so many other of our overlapping issues. And we are the ones honored to have a partner like you and to collaborate with you on the life issue. So thank you for raising awareness through podcasts like this. It's easy to lose sight of really critical ballot measures like this in a presidential election year. So thank you for doing your part. We're so honored to do it. I was honored to be here, so I just appreciate the chance to chat with you all.
Well, it's great to have you, and we're just thankful the Lord has given us the ability to do this podcast. So to our listeners, I say until next time, continue to speak up for the vulnerable.
Have you read the news? CMDA Advocacy is pleased to introduce the Advocacy Report, a quarterly newsletter written by members of the advocacy team. In the Advocacy Report, you will find updates on our state and federal level efforts, resources for you, and so much more. All editions can be found at cmda.org/advocacy. You're invited. Please join CMDA on Tuesday, October 29th, 2024, for a day of fasting and prayer. Unite with us as we ask the Lord to move in mighty ways to change hearts across the nation as we fight against pro-abortion ballot amendments in several states. For more information on how you can be involved, please email advocacy@cmda.org. Thanks for listening to The Voice of Advocacy. If you would like to suggest a future guest or share a comment with us, please email advocacy@cmda.org. And if you like the podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share it on your favorite social media platform. This podcast has been a production of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.